Okay, thank you. So in thinking about what is the how natural scenes and other stimuli can be represented optimally, there are two classes of questions. One is, a given neuron, what kinds of features should it pay attention to? And there has been a significant amount of progress in understanding, given the statistics of natural stimuli, what are the features that should be picked up in the environment. What I would like to focus today, also building on the work of Simon Laughlin, is what are the optimal nonlinear transformations once we select what are the features we are going to pay attention to, and in a situation where neurons are sensitive to multiple features. So let me review the model, the standard model for how we will describe neural responses. So typically, I will use all of my examples based on visual processing. And an animal is presented with a stimulus, and it can be a diverse set of stimuli. And we are recording a set of responses from that neuron. And this neuron is not necessarily the first order neuron, but rather can be separated by several stages of processing from the stimulus. But nevertheless, we will use this representation and model it back with respect to stimuli. So let me illustrate this using the experiments, the classic experiments by Kuffler. So in this case, these are responses of retinal cells. And if we shine the light in the center, there are lots of spikes. And if we shine the light in the surround, there are fewer spikes. And in this case, so the stimuli are very simple, but we can generalize from this experiment and make a model that for any stimuli that is, for any arbitrary stimulus that can be presented on the scene, the response of the neuron will be the result of the convolution with whatever the stimulus was and the receptive field or the filter that this neuron applies to any stimulus in the visual space. So for that neuron, because it emits lots of spikes in the center, we will assign a positive weight to the filter in the center. And then because there are fewer spikes in the surround, we will assign negative weights to in the surround. So here the color goes from dark, which is negative, to white, which is positive, and orange is zero. So this neuron is paying no attention to stimuli outside of the receptive field, and we will model. So is that, many people know this, but since this is fundamental to what I will be building on with respect to nonlinearities, I want to make sure that we get the idea of the filter that I get across. So please let me know if there are any questions. So basically, in that particular case, we will present any stimulus. It can be a natural stimulus. And we will record a sequence of spikes. And we will represent this transformation from stimuli to spikes with a combination of two factors. One is there will be a filter similar to a convolution filter like Sebastian Song talked about, such that no matter what the stimulus is, a given neuron will compare any stimulus with that filter. And depending on the degree of the match, if this is a match positive, then we will be somewhere on this axis, and the spike probability will be large. If this a given pattern is resembles more of the negative of this filter, then the filtered stimulus value will be negative, and the firing rate will be suppressed below the background level. So a given neuron, in this case, is modeled as two stages. One is the linear transformation, and then the nonlinear transformation. And we can, so what we do is in the experiment, there is a stimuli, a set of diverse set of stimuli, and a sequence of spikes. And it's all been modeled by selecting what is the filter and what is the nonlinearity. And of course, depending on what kind of neuron it is, we will find different filters and different nonlinearities. So that's the goal of our analysis. So for example, as the signals travel from the retina through the lateral geniculate nucleus to visual cortex, if we record in the visual cortex, then these filters, they become orientationally selective, as discovered by Hubel and Wiesel. And we can make this model even more complicated, as is appropriate for some cells, in allowing for the possibility that a given neuron can be sensitive not just to one feature, but to multiple features of the stimulus. So this would be an example taken to model properties of complex cells in the visual cortex. And in this case, once we allow for the possibility that the spikes are based on selecting, picking up two features in the stimulus space, so the filter one and filter two, then the firing rate becomes, previously I had it as a one-dimensional function, and now it will be a two-dimensional function where the color shows the firing rate, and the x-axis is how similar is the stimulus to the first feature or filter, so along this direction, and the y-axis shows how stimulus is similar to the second filter, and this is this axis. And in this case, white shows high firing rate and dark shows low firing rate. So this model is kind of a complex cell-like behavior with whenever the filter stimulus is similar to the first filter, there is a high firing rate, or to the negative of this filter, there's also high firing rate. And the same is true with respect to the second filter. So the goal of my work is to talk about what are the optimal nonlinearities in a situation where the cell is sensitive to multiple stimulus features. And in this, in the process of doing so, we can also determine the optimal number, in some cases, of features that the cells should be sensitive to. Are there any questions? And so this analysis is fairly simple to do experimentally. This is the hero of my talk, which I call neural decision boundary. So this is an example of a cell from, it's a simple cell in the primary visual cortex. And what I'm drawing here is the firing rate as a function of, so for each for this cell, I determined the two relevant stimulus features, which I'm not showing. And I'm only showing you the firing rate as a function of the first stimulus component on the x-axis and the second stimulus component on the y-axis. And in general, it's a very complicated. So color shows, dark color shows high firing rates and white shows low firing rates. And in general, it's a very complicated function. But what the way I want to model this is I will draw a contour at half the maximal rate. And everything above the maximal rate, we will say the neuron is on. And everything below that, we will say that the neuron is off. And what I want to develop is the theory for the optimal shape of this decision boundary. Yes?
Can you say how you identify the components, the stimulus components?
Well, so there are a number of ways to do that.
But it's not independent from this, I mean,
it is somewhat independent. So that is, you first find the components, and then once you find, so for if you give me any set of components, they can be relevant or irrelevant, I can always plot the firing rate as a function of some stimulus component one and some stimulus component two. The question is, when I try to find them, I'm trying to, I'm finding those components that, together with their own nonlinearity, describe best the data. So to answer your question more specifically, the way we do this is we look for the component that allows for maximal information between, so we have stimuli and we have spikes. And if I select one, if I mention one stimulus component, I will have certain information between that stimulus component and the firing rate. And if I change the feature that I'm paying attention to, that information between that stimulus component and the firing rate will be different. And we look for those that allow for maximal information. That stimulus component one, so once you fix that, then you look for the second stimulus component that together with the first augments in the best possible way. So that...
Why do you limit yourself on two? Why do you limit yourself on two components?
Well, this is, basically it's the limitation of signal to noise in determining how many components, because you can see that going back to the first question, when I select the relevant stimulus components, I'm basically computing the information contained in this input-output function. And if you add another component, there will be, so this is approximately 10 bins by 10 bins, so this is 100 bins. If you add another component, that's 1,000 bins. And for a cell that has only several thousand spikes, it's hard to sample and it's hard to determine these components significantly. So there are ways sometimes of doing that, but because these were probed with natural scenes and I can't use spectral covariance and so on, so there were only two components.
Yes? Filters are based on firing rates or spiking intervals?
They're based on the firing rate.
But that's irrelevant to the way the theory works, or do you have to, it's important that you...
Well, so this is an experimental illustration, right? So we will have, you select a response of interest, and for that response of interest, it can be a spike pattern, and you select when does this spike pattern happen in the stimulus space. But I wanted to illustrate two points. A is that this decision boundary is not curved, and this will be important. Yes, please. Yes, I will. That's my next slide. Yes. Yeah. So I wanted to illustrate it in two dimensions, but we will. Let me show you. Are there more questions?
So for every cell, you have the same two.
No, they're all different.
So how do you search? I guess I'm not sure because. You have a set that you always work with, and you just pick in the best two from that set?
So for each cell, there are their own two different features. Mm-hmm. And the axis here will differ. But the firing rate, I'm just showing you the firing rate in the relevant space for those
how
two.
How do you select the features, I guess?
Well, so the features are selected as most maximally informative ones.
For each cell, you identify the two
yes.
important components for that cell. Then you don't have the choice.
Suppose you don't sample a chance.
So it all depends on the stimulus set, but we presume that the stimulus set is complete, and I can verify that. So there is the practical question is, even though the two stimulus sets are complete, yet you find for a given cell two different relevant features, because this is not an engineering system, this is a live system, it adapts. So it adds additional complexity level. But for a given stimulus statistics, you can find relevant stimulus features, and then you can look for the shape of the nonlinearity. And you can also ask, as a result of adaptation, we can make predictions for how the shape of this input-output function should change following adaptation.
How can you tell the stimulus?
Well, I have my grid size. I design my pixels. I'm interested in filters that are, say, 100-dimensional or 1,000-dimensional. And as long as I present stimuli that sample completely, have contained 1,000 orthogonal axes, my stimulus set is complete.
Okay, so what is your stimulus?
What?
What is your stimulus?
Well, in this case, it was natural stimuli.
What is it? Pictures or?
Movies. So you can, as long as you find 1,000 orthogonal axes, which is not that hard to do because there are approximately 10,000 or 20,000 stimuli, so it's not that hard to arrange them to make sure that there are 1,000 orthogonal axes. So let me go back to explain why we work in two dimensions, and this goes back to Simon Laughlin's work. And if we have a stimulus distribution, and the answer is that the optimal nonlinearity for encoding the stimulus distribution is a cumulative distribution. But if I approximate this, I work in a reduced representation by approximating that either neuron is on or off. So in this case, the optimal solution is to put the threshold in the middle of the distribution. So there is some stimuli, and if I want to maximize information, I will put a threshold in the middle of the distribution such that I use in equal way both the presence of a spike and the absence of a spike.
Wouldn't improve information transfer if I put two performance two decision boundaries?
Well, so then you have two neurons. Well, let's think about the noise case. Okay. Actually, it does. So it depends on where you put them. Without noise, it might be equivalent. So let's think about. So what you can do, as long as you have the same firing rate, nominally you will have the same information, but there is always this threshold is not has some noise associated with it, and that's the penalty. So this is all well. So suppose I put the threshold in the middle of the distribution, but suppose I have to think about constraints on neural coding, such as that each spike costs some metabolic energy. And suppose, yes, I would like to put this threshold in the middle, but suppose it doesn't, I can't sustain such high firing rates. Then in one dimension, I will put this threshold as close as possible to the middle of the distribution, but the problem is solved for me once I take into account the constraint of the firing rate. So, and this is not true in multi-dimensions. So if we think about stimulus distribution, which now depends on two variables, and it can be stimulus intensity and rate of change, and the color shows how often stimuli fall in this two-dimensional plane, then I can do a straightforward generalization of the one-dimensional case, and I will say, well, I will draw a line here, and I will assign to all stimuli, there will be spike on the right of this line, and to all stimuli on the left, there will be no spike. That's one solution. Of course, there is another solution, which from the information theoretic point of view is equivalent. I can draw the same line along the second axis, and as long as there is the same firing rate associated with this, these two solutions are equivalent. But theoretically, maybe, even though it's not as pretty and it's not as simple as drawing straight lines, maybe the optimal solution can be something which is more complicated and carves out a region with a curved boundary. And I would like to provide intuition for why that could be. So when the stimuli are uniformly distributed, then what happens is that there is noise associated with this decision boundary. Where is my noise? I don't know. Well, so there is noise associated with this boundary. If I put this boundary where stimuli are occurring often, there will be a large penalty. So I'm trying to avoid places where put my decisions where in a position where stimuli are commonly occurring. At the same time, I want to maintain compare contours which provide the same firing rate. So that leads to a trade-off between dissecting the same percentage of stimuli, assigning them to the spike responses, but yet minimizing the length of this contour weighted by how noisy the responses are.
Can you switch to 1 and 0 then, or will that change
yes.
the firing rate?
You can switch 1 and 0, and it just will provide different solutions. As long as the firing rate is the same, there are two symmetric solutions, right?
Are you assuming the noise background of any kind?
Yes. So, yes. So the noise, the assumption is that for all stimuli that are far from this decision boundary, the noise is minimal. So for all stimuli here, time after time, there will be a reliable response, so there is no noise. And for all stimuli that are deep inside the other region, time after time, there will be a spike, so there is no noise. And here we have kind of a domain boundary, where for half the time there is a spike and half the time there is none, so there is noise in this region. Yes?
I need to follow up one of the earlier question. So if you have some, is it always possible to arrange like similar space, like you did in one dimension, into one unimodal distribution? Or what if it was bimodal or in 2D, not simply connected?
Yes, it is possible. Well, so we will have a solution where you write down the probability distribution and you can find the contour for this. And I have not considered the stimuli that were bimodal, but in principle, you should be able to.
But then it wouldn't look like a simple...
So in practice, that's right, in practice, for the, I only considered unimodal probability distribution of stimuli, and in theory you can have a blob here and a blob there, but because they all incur the boundary, the circumference, and it always turns out to be more efficient to combine them into one.
Well, I can argue that I can satisfy this spike constraint by shrinking the region, right?
Yes.
The number of spikes proportional to the area, right?
Yes.
Right on top. I can put this distribution right on top.
So well,
can you provide the distribution why it doesn't happen?
Well, basically because I'm trying to maximizing information, which also comes, the penalty comes this circumference. So if you take two blobs and
if I have a single blob in this case,
yes.
Why can't I just put it on the top of the peak?
You can sometimes.
In equivalent in one-dimensional case for this would be to have like a segment.
Yes, sometimes I will show you solutions where this does happen. It just turns out not to be optimal, and it's just a matter of computation.
But just, I'm sorry, I'm still a little bit unclear about how you set the problem up. So you assume that the components are given to you, or to the
yes.
neuron. And then for those given components,
that's right.
given input statistics,
yes.
you want to choose the decision boundary.
Yes.
But isn't choosing components and choosing decision boundary,
it should be. Mm-hmm.
Well, they are linked, but you can still ask. They are linked, but I can say, for example, for the Gaussian case, I have certain freedom in choosing. So let me just show you the Gaussian case, okay? And they are linked, so you can think of this a simpler problem, just like you stated. Given the components and given the stimulus distribution, what's the optimal nonlinearity? And sometimes, in certain cases, it also points to what are the stimulus components because the orientation of this contour selects what are the components that you should pick up. Because if you have a multidimensional surface, then in certain directions it will be flat, and then those stimulus components are not relevant. So what you can say, well, I'm sensitive to all components, and I'm finding the optimal decision boundaries, and it will turn out that it varies in certain directions, but not in others, and those are my relevant components. So I think I already alluded to the fact that we will select this contour by maximizing information. And information is the difference of how variable is the response across all stimuli and minus how variable is neural response for a given stimulus averaged across all stimuli. So the response entropy is just the average firing rate times the logarithm of the average firing rate times this inverse of probability of no spike, logarithm 1 minus probability of no spike. So if I work in this problem of selecting the contour for a given firing rate, my response entropy is fixed, and my only hope of selecting the maximally informative contour is to minimize the noise entropy. And so I think I already went through this, but basically the noise entropy is an average across all stimuli and how often they happen times the response entropy for a given stimulus. And the argument is that for all of these stimuli, the response entropy is zero. And for all of these stimuli, the response entropy is also zero. So the only way only the stimuli that are near this decision boundary, they incur the noise entropy. So the noise entropy is just the circumference along this contour. In the interest of time, I will just provide the intuitive explanation for how this decision boundary is derived and just give you the answer. So the answer is right here. So basically, once I know the probability distribution of stimuli and the firing rate, I can write down a closed form equation for this decision boundary. And let me just provide intuition for all of these terms. Yes?
I'm trying to understand something. The fact that it's only the boundary is a statement that the fire rate is constant inside of, it's not graded. It's constant inside and constant outside.
Yes.
So things would be very different if it was graded.
I think of this as, I hope that the response saturates. And the width over which it's graded is the width of the transition region. And for the purposes of this analysis, my noise entropy is the width of this transition region integrated over the. And as long as this well defined, I don't really care whether it's very small or very large. As long as, but they could merge such that it never really saturates. And that's the limit of this approach. So the limiting case is when I have a decision boundary one, and then it starts immediately to drop. And that's where, and I think most of the experimental data are pointing, are close to that limit. So we will be hoping that it will work at the boundary.
This sharp boundary limit, how is it derived, and what is the parameter that you...
Well, so the parameter is this noise sigma. And you just, in the theory, it just comes out, I just give it to you. So I give the every stimulus is associated with uncertainty, and that's sigma. And
so this is valid for small noise level?
Yes. So I just wanted to point out a couple of terms that this is an interplay between. So what happens is that there is a term which penalizes curved contours, and it goes with our intuition that we want these boundaries to be straight. But sometimes it's unavoidable, and I can gain by moving away from commonly observed stimuli utilizing curved contours. So this, in this equation, there is a term which is proportional to the local curvature of the contour multiplied by noise of the contour and the probability distribution.
So why is the intuition that it has to be straight, the curved boundary?
Well,
why do I have this intuition?
So the reason I have this intuition is because I want to have a contour which has the smallest circumference. And if you have a straight contour, it does have, if you want to separate.
It's just a statement that was making a statement of the same statement, right? But why do I look at that?
Well, you want to minimize the noise, the circumference of this decision boundary, right? Because the noise entropy is proportional to all the errors will be made at the boundary. So that's why when you talk about two separate regions, if they have the same firing rate, and
well, two separate regions. I spoke actually about two decision boundaries, but
well, I think they're the same, right? If you have two decision boundaries, they have two. So let me solve this equation for a couple of. So we can solve this equation. Formally, it's valid for any probability of distribution of stimuli. And I will now show three examples for uniform inputs, for Gaussian inputs, and for an approximation of natural stimuli. So in the case of uniform distribution, this term goes away. And if we have constant noise, then what we get is that sigma, which is noise, times curvature equals to a constant. So the solution is a circle, and that makes sense. For example, if you think about retinal ganglion cells, their decision boundaries are circular receptive fields. However, we can think a little bit more precisely at this equation and allow for the possibility where noise is not constant, even though it's still uniform probability distribution of stimuli. And the question here was motivated by the data from Inge's lab, where they measured in the recent abstract for Society for Neuroscience outlines of the receptive fields. And one can see that they overlap, and if one rotates them by 180 degrees, then the gaps appear such that these receptive fields do indeed point towards each other, but they are irregular. So when I look at this picture, there are two questions. One is, I know that the optimal receptive field has a circular shape. And the two questions are, either nature doesn't know how to make a perfect circle, or maybe this is the correction for the input noise level at the previous, for example, cone level. And
what retinal axis does the long axis match up with?
I don't know.
That's a good question, because there is a report from Kat from years ago from Bill Levitt's lab that the receptive fields of certain ganglion cells are elongated and they're orientated towards the visual streak. So they could be actually correlated with fixation of eye movement.
Yes.
So it's the amyotrophic motion.
Yes. So in my case, I have a very simplified case, right? I'm considering uniform inputs, and once I take into account natural stimuli and eye movements, and I'm not prepared to talk about those.
Is the solution, could this be a reason to have it like that in order to tile the space?
Yes. We can. So that's the argument, is suppose I presume that color here shows the uncertainty in the stimulus position, and these circular receptive fields are just the answer optimal well if the input noise was uniform. But once I take into account that the input noise is not uniform, then we can solve our equation and find that, of course, the contours tend to move towards stimuli that are associated with lower noise levels. So they try to move away. For example, this red contour moved away from this high noise region and moved towards the lower noise region. So this is a simulation where I just assigned the noise value to different stimuli, and I'm seeing how the contours that are circular, how they deform in order to maximize information transmission when the noise is not uniform. And the noise pattern is shown by color. So you can see that, for example, for this receptive field, it moves away from the high noise region, and it moves towards the low noise region. And this one, too, moves towards the low noise region.
How do receptive fields know about each other? Do you increase the center position?
So in this case, the receptive fields, so that's a separate problem. I only want to talk about single neuron problem today. So in this case, it's the center positions are fixed and initially, and then I moved each contour independently of each other. And let's not talk about, I'm happy to talk after the talk about multi-neuronal problem. So now I want to move on to my second example of Gaussian distribution of stimuli. And in this case, the probability distribution will be a Gaussian blob, and I can substitute this probability distribution into the equation. And there will be two solutions, and maybe to answer Alice's question, so there are two solutions. One is I put a decision boundary all around the peak and its circular symmetry, or I put it as a straight line. And they both satisfy this equation, because in one case, this is a constant, and this is a constant, and this is the circle solution. Or in the other case, curvature is zero, and this the normal then determines the receptive field. And it's not obvious which one of them is better, but I can plot for each spike probability. I can select a straight line solution, and I can select a circular solution. And I find that for any probability of a spike, the noise entropy is always higher for the circular solutions than it is for the straight line solutions. So if I'm recording from neurons that are optimized for processing Gaussian inputs, they should only be sensitive to one stimulus component. And that was the solution in two dimensions, but actually we can find for analytical solutions in any dimensionality. So that's a little puzzling, because I have shown you experimental data where neurons in the visual cortex have curved decision boundaries, and they're sensitive to multiple stimulus features. Yet the optimal solution for the Gaussian inputs is to cut space along straight boundaries such that one neuron will only be sensitive to one stimulus feature, not the other. Yes, that's right. So these are just the examples of the decision boundaries drawn again at.
What are the stimulus components here?
So the stimulus was a natural walk through the woods type of stimulus. And for each cell, so these are three simple cells and three complex cells. And for each cell, I found their own two relevant stimulus features, which I'm not showing here. But I'm just showing these decision boundaries. And I think this one that you've seen before. And they're all curved. So there's somewhat of a question whether or not some of them are closed because of signal-to-noise ratios. But I think that they're... It's fair to say that they're all curved. Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry, like coming back to this. Presumably there are more than two relevant.
Yes.
You know, we know that
yes.
frequency
that's
is
right.
polar.
Yes.
So
it's not necessarily frequency and color, because if it is a stimulus which is in, so these stimulus components, they vary both in space and time. But nevertheless, your statement is correct that they may be sensitive to more than two. But the argument is that what I showed for the Gaussian inputs, they should be sensitive only to one, and the real data is two or more. Okay. So the question was, the next, there were studies both in auditory domain and in the visual system that natural stimuli are non-Gaussian. And here is one example of the non-Gaussian distribution, which in two dimensions, where the probability to observe the stimulus away from the central location decays as e to the minus x, not e to the minus x squared, as it was in the Gaussian case. And here, our theory is saved, because we find that the optimal contours come from three families. You can have a version of the circle, but it's kind of a stretch circle. And instead of one straight line, one could have a sequence of two straight segments connected by a curved segment, and they can have different symmetry. And in order to analyze them, I will plot the spike probability. And for each spike probability, I will select the appropriate contour from this family, and from that family. And I will plot the noise entropy. And so what happens is that at low firing rates, these solutions are dominant. And at intermediate firing rates, these type of solutions are dominant. And we can zoom into this region to find out that this solution is never optimal. So coming back to the question about two-dimensional inputs, this was a solution in two dimensions. And I know that these contours are better than the straight contour for any kind of dimensionality of the stimuli. But what I don't know is whether I can find potentially more optimal solutions that curved in more than two features. So that remains to be seen.
So I was just trying to understand. So my intuition from the setup was that there was a force on the contours that would push it away from high probability.
Yes.
And so like your curve A there, it seems like there should be a force pushing the middle of the top line up and at the expense of the corners. So it seems like that should be rotated 45 degrees from the way you have it. So what's wrong with my intuition? What am I not understanding?
Well, so there is one question. There is that force, but what I didn't mention is that there is also a tendency to follow the contours of a constant probability distribution.
Right, and again, it's not doing that. It would be doing that more if it were rotating.
So what it wants to do is that it can be more curved when it follows the contours of the constant probability distribution, which in this case follow these lines. And when it crosses the levels of probability distributions, it wants to be straight. So then it agrees. So when I change how often stimuli are observed, I want to do it in a straight fashion. And then when I'm following the contours of the probability distribution, I can afford to be curved. So there is a balance, I think on my summary slide, there is this balance between curvature and normal to the contour times the gradient of the probability distribution. So it's kind of the balance of those two terms.
But what are the units? I mean, these are bits, and so you're
yes.
distinguishing between such different receptors.
Well, so
1,000.
So this is noise entropy divided by the noise level. The noise level multiplies the noise entropy is in units of sigma. Yes. So, yes, there is this question of that these numbers are small, but the question is if I can save one bit over per stimulus over the lifetime, why not use this solution over that solution?
Because there are other constraints to the information, maybe.
Well, if there are other considerations, then we'll solve a different optimization problem.
No, but the argument is that given that there might be a reconsideration, it's unlikely that these different differences are important.
Well, it's still so these are the differences, the switching between this solution and that solution, but it's still better than this solution and a straight line. And that's the argument. That with non-Gaussian inputs, the curved solutions are better. Even though the simpler solution is a straight line solution, more efficient to be sensitive to multiple stimulus features.
So where would the straight line fit on that?
The straight line fit goes from here to, I would say, approximately there. Parallel to the axis.
This is like 10% work.
Well, 0.5 versus 0.3. So I think I will conclude here. So in thinking about the optimal nonlinearities, we can derive the general equation which defines the nonlinear input-output function, taking the curvature of the contour, the noise level, and the probability distribution of stimuli. And solving this equation, we find that if you have a Gaussian stimuli, then optimal decision contours are straight lines. So this generates somewhat of a prediction if I adapt neurons to Gaussian inputs versus adapting neurons to natural stimuli. One should you lose the sensitivity to the second component.
If that's the experiment that you'd like to see.
one of the possibilities, yes. In this area. Well, I think that there is a question of when I present Gaussian stimuli versus natural scenes, there might be multiple effects. One is that the filters might change, and that follows from other work. So in my other papers, we have shown that white noise receptive fields differ from natural scenes, but they were not matched in the power spectrum. So the question is, when they're matched in the power spectrum, whether or not there is adaptation to the receptive field shape. And this will be another prediction for the same experiment. Even if the receptive fields do not change, whether or not there will be a greater influence of the second dimension in the stimulus. And at least for the exponential inputs in two dimensions, which capture this large deviation character of natural scenes, then the optimal decision contours are curved, indicating sensitivity to multiple stimulus features. And I would like to thank my mentors and my group. So this work was with Bill Bialik, and Alison Dope introduced me to the auditory system. The data that I have shown was taken with Ken Miller and Mike Stryker's laboratory, and it's fun to talk to Chuck Stevens about these ideas. And these are students and postdocs in my group. Thank you for your attention.
This is really a mean field theory. You have a neuron embedded in a network. You're treating all of these neurons are trying to solve this problem simultaneously from the point of view. And presumably
they're conflicting. The paper that I'm working on right now shows that one of the advantages of this approach is that the shape of this neural decision boundary does not change if I think about neurons in a circuit. So it's derived by the same type of the equation, maybe with a different effective constant down there. And I think that's one of the advantages of this approach.
It's highly non-obvious, though.
I can half believe that, even though I derived it, but so that I'm not talking about this.